Improvised thoughts, music, and talk about music with your host, B.G. Adair.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is B.G. Adair with Improvised Thoughts, and tonight it is a real treat to have a wonderful drummer, Jeff Hamilton.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, nice to hear your voice from out there in Earthquake Land. You have a new project out called It's Hamilton Time, mm-hmm. and we're going to open these proceedings by doing the opening tune, which is the Charlie Parker tune, Relaxing at Camarillo, which I always thought was kind of an anachronism, if that's the right word, because it's anything but a relaxing tune, which I suppose is what he meant by,
right.
by being there, because he had some problems there.
Right.
Why don't you set this up for us and tell us about your personnel, and then we'll get going on it.
All right. Larry Fuller is the pianist from Toledo, Ohio, originally, and moved to Seattle to join Ernestine Anderson about, 7-8 years ago, and has been with her since then. He brought in Relaxin', as a matter of fact, because it's a tune he likes to play.
Mm-hmm.
This is really mostly his arrangement, and I just did a couple of things to it to sort of make it fit into the idea of the trio, but this is really Larry's tune that he brought in. Jesse Murphy is the bassist from Northern California, and he went to school at USC, studied with John Clayton, who, of course, has been a longtime mm-hmm. cohort of mine, and just graduated, Jesse did, from USC a couple years ago, and loves to walk, get a natural sound on the bass. He doesn't even use an amplifier, and which seems to be the trend nowadays, which I'm really glad to hear. And he's now living in New York and freelancing a little bit with Vincent Herring's group.
Mm-hmm.
And Carl Allen also has a group, so he's working a little bit in New York. So that's the group. And I heard both of these guys a long time ago. I played with Larry on an Ernestine Anderson job at Ray Brown's club here in Los Angeles, the Loa.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him at that time, I said, I think you and I are going to play together one of these days. It feels too good not to put this together. And it did happen eventually. And the same thing with Jesse. I was actually giving a clinic that he was a bass player in. And I remembered his time feel and his big round sound and told him the same thing. And at that time, I didn't know I was going to have my own group. But mm-hmm. when it happened, it was all very natural.
Well, it is indeed all very natural, and it's a wonderfully swinging, wonderful feeling group. So let's listen to Relaxin' at Camarillo with the Jeff Hamilton Trio.
Great, thanks.
We're talking this evening to Jeff Hamilton, wonderful drummer, wonderful musician. We're listening to tunes from his new recording, It's Hamilton Time. That was Charlie Parker's Relaxing at Camarillo, of course. I got to tell you, I haven't heard an album with this kind of playing on it. And we get a lot of albums across our desk, and there are a lot of wonderful records being made. But the spirit of this album just knocked me out so much, because it really reminds me of the old trio albums, the old-fashioned trio albums. And by that I mean the Oscar Peterson trio, the really hard, driving, let's play time, let's play pretty, let's play really tight kind of albums that I find are just not all that, there aren't that many of them around these days.
Well, thank you, first of all. I appreciate the comments about it. I think, secondly, that there is probably this void in the market nowadays, because the piano trio is not what it was. It's mm-hmm. dying art, much like brush playing. As a drummer, there aren't that many people that know how to play with brushes and do something with them.
Right.
They can play some time, but they haven't really explored what that part of the instrument is about. And I feel that that the trio players have dwindled over the years. That mm-hmm. there aren't that many. For instance, just take drummers. There aren't that many pure trio drummers that know how to shade a group and weave and set up everyone and make them feel comfortable and still do it lightly and heavily if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And know how to shift gears in between solos to make it feel better, or during solos. And it's just all the little subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of the volume of the music over the last few years has been pretty loud, and the role of the drummer, role,
mm-hmm.
has been to help the soloist create the solo at the same time the soloist is playing, and I like to play that way
mm-hmm.
as well. But I also like to lay a carpet for the soloist to feel comfortable enough to play on. And I feel like people don't really spend enough time in trios. One person who has is Benny Green.
It's mm-hmm.
of younger players who really is trying to find the essence, find out about the essence of piano trio playing. And I mean, he's really done his homework, and he's spent a lot of time with the great trio players, and I think more people need to do that if they want to find out what it was about, because it's really a craft.
Yeah, it is.
You have to learn from, you have to be an apprentice under somebody to find out how that's done, and I studied the drumming of Shelly Mann, who was a great
mm-hmm.
trio player. Of course, I'm friends with Ed Thigpen, I'm proud to say, after trying to figure out what he did for all those years, and then to be able to sit down and have dinner with him I'm still scratching my head when that happens.
I know.
The Vernell Fournier, you know,
mm-hmm.
to find out what all the great trio drummers did and why, and listen to it in the music, and I think that that amount of homework does come out on a project when you put your own mind to it.
Yeah. To me, as a piano player and as a mostly trio player, It has always been really the drummer for me, for my groups, that either made or broke the group.
I agree with you. In a trio, I think it's true. Now, in a big band, I think that, now some people aren't going to agree with this, but I think that if you have a great bass player in a big band
mm-hmm.
and a so-so drummer, the band will still swing. But if you have a great drummer and a terrible bass player, the band is in big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reverse is true in a trio. I think of course, there are only three people in a trio, so the bass player has to hold his own. But you can have a little weaker bass player in a trio, and it will still happen.
Mm-hmm. I do a lot of duo playing too, and Roger and I and other bass players. And there's a kind of control that you can have just with the duo playing,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. But once you add the drummer to that trio, then that drummer has to be the guy that really knows what he's doing.
Right.
And it really, the young drummers, I find, sometimes haven't developed the listening skills in terms of knowing that they need to listen and
mm-hmm.
watch
mm-hmm.
the piano player,
mm-hmm.
Like some of the older guys do. You look at the great trio drummers, and you see that they really never take their eyes off of what's going on.
Or at least their ears.
Or their ears, yeah.
But there are a lot of old players that don't know how to do that, too.
I can't
lay that on the young players.
That's true. You're right.
There's a certain amount of it, and they can be helped because they haven't been exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Some of the older players just choose not to do that. They haven't been in a trio setting where the piano player says, I need this from you.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the music needs for it to work. So, I mean, I feel very fortunate in that I've gotten to work with great piano players who have directed me that way and said, you know, what you're doing is fine, but can you try this? It will help the group get to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what needs to be done.
Speaking of who you have recorded with, I'm looking at your liner notes here for your trio album, and I just want to let the audience in on this. This is just so amazing to me. You have recorded over 100 records with artists. I'm just going to pick out a few here. Natalie Cole, Rosemary Clooney, Barbara Streisand, Mel Torme, George Shearing, Nina Simone, Barney Kessel, Mark Murphy, Herb Ellis, and the list just goes on and on and on. Obviously, you're a first-call drummer for a lot of different kinds of projects, not just the jazz projects out there. What else do you do besides your trio playing? Are you doing film work or anything like that?
I do some, but not a great deal of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what the things I get called for are for projects where they want what I do,
mm-hmm.
want my sound. I'm very lucky in that I don't have to go in and take any front heads off the bass drums or muffle any of the drums or change cymbals to a harder sound. I take the same set that I play in a club or a concert into the studio.
No kidding.
And they get my sound, and that's what they're calling me for. They want my brush playing or mm-hmm. my big band playing or something, and so I feel very fortunate to be able to do that because I really thought I wanted to be a studio player when I first moved here in 78, and when I saw Shelly Mann playing, I believe it was a Love Boat date, and he had about four or five tom-toms with the heads off and was playing, and he was happy. I'm not putting him down because he was happy
mm-hmm.
to be a studio player, but that was a different time when that generation was the first set of jazz players to break into the studio work.
Right.
Before then, it had been classical players, and he was proud of the fact that he was a studio player. And he had the mentality, which is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
He could go in and play that all day and go home and be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I go in and I want to change it into a bebop, you know.
I have that problem.
So I don't have the studio mentality. But when I get called to go in and just play for the things that I do, for instance, Natalie Cole's thing was all swing and big band.
Right.
Or trio with Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that I like to do. And they knew that, and Ray Brown was on the things, or John Clayton that I was on. I also played in Bill Holman's band for over 10 years, and he arranged a couple of things on the
mm-hmm.
record. So that was a natural thing to have me on. So
mm-hmm.
it just I'm very fortunate to get to do that. The only movie things I've done have been things that have had big band themes for the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
I did some work on the Glenn Ross film. I did some on on For the Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just hit and miss. I don't do a great deal of that. Most of the recording I do is for CDs.
Mm-hmm. Well, still, as I said, that would be that's an AFM pension dream list.
you know, a lot of people
the
look
old
at
percentage
this,
rolls in.
Yeah, a lot of people look at this list and they say, this guy can't keep a job.
Right. Well.
So it may not be all that good.
That's it's well. When you've got names like Natalie Cole and Rosemary Clooney and Nina Simone and George Shearing on your resume, I think you're holding down a job pretty well.
Well, at least for that record.
For
date,
that record right? date, you are. We're going to listen to another tune from your trio album, the Jeff Hamilton Trio. It's Hamilton Time, and it's on the Lake Street Records label. We're going to go to Old Devil Moon. I was particularly taken with this tune, with this cut, for two reasons. Old Devil Moon is a favorite tune of mine that I sing, and it's a lovely, lovely tune. But I also was taken with what you all did with it and setting it up with a little sort of 6/4 kind of thing there at the front.
Right.
When you put the trio together and when you're recording a tune like this, do you play this out like in a club, or you guys woodshed a while, or do you just go in the studio and you say, well, let's see what we can do to this tune? How does that work? And
well,
set this up for us a little
on
bit.
On this particular tune, I had heard so many players play it, and was actually kind of tired of the tune.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I just pulled out Sinatra Songs for Swingin' Lovers, I think on Capitol, and this tune just jumped off the CD because it was swinging so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, boy, I would really like to do this, but I don't want to do it exactly like this. Of course, you know, Sinatra's version is Sinatra's, and what else are you going to do with a Nelson Riddle arrangement?
Really?
It's perfect. Leave it alone. So we played through this tune in a rehearsal, and I heard this beat on it, and I thought, yeah, this would be nice to apply to it. And I said, Jesse, you're on your own. So you can come up with whatever kind of line you want to fit this beat. And then Larry just played the melody over it like he would be playing it in 4/4 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just kept going back and forth and coming back to state the opening theme. So it just sort of happened.
What really felt good to me is that change up. And there again, we're talking about how the drummer sort of sets up the trio with those dynamic and rhythmic changes. When it goes from the little 6/4, 6/4
uh-huh.
feel into the really hard swing, like probably the second half of that verse, it just feels like you're coming up out of the cool water and the sunshine. I mean, it just swings really hard.
You pick up on a lot of these things.
Well, it just that's my job.
Right.
Anyway, we're going to listen to Old Devil Moon, the Jeff Hamilton Trio.
All right, thanks.
Little Devil Moon, the Jeff Hamilton Trio. We're speaking tonight with Jeff from his home in California. Jeff, you grew up in, Indiana?
Right, Richmond, Indiana.
Tell us about the early Jeff Hamilton. Did you study music in school when you were young, when you were a child? And how did you get from that to where you are now?
Okay, well...
25 words or less.
To borrow a line from Peter Nero, I started piano at 5 and quit at 5:30. I really didn't like playing the piano. Everybody in my family except my father had played piano, and he played center field. But I was supposed to be the next piano player to come up in the family, and I really didn't like the instrument, so they made me wait until I was 8 years old to take up the drums to see if I was serious about it. Got in the summer band, and they put me in with the students over my head, and I became the first chair, and then got with the drum instructor there at the time, John McMahon, who was a great rudimental teacher. A lot of discipline, military-style drumming, counting the tempo in your back, and after going through all the music courses in school, went to Indiana University, was there for 2 years as a percussion major, left because I wasn't getting to play enough jazz, and studied with John Von Olin in Indianapolis, the Kenton, ex-Kenton and ex-Woody Herman drummer, and learned an awful lot from him in 8 months. He really changed my ride cymbal and my concept of swinging real, to a real loose style. I'd been sort of a Buddy Rich clone up to that point. And John turned me around. John Von Olin turned me around. John Clayton had played in Palm Springs since he was from California, had played with Murray McEachran, who was commissioned by Jane Dorsey to lead a Tommy Dorsey orchestra, and called John and said, I needed a bunch of young students that are willing to come out and work for $250 a week and ride the bus around the country and play Elks clubs as a Tommy Dorsey band. And at 19 years old, I jumped in.
Sounds like a good job to me at that age.
That was the beginning, yeah. So, and then Lionel Hampton snatched me off of that band, and then John called me to join Monty Alexander for 2 years after that, so I left Ham's band to do that. And we played with Milt Jackson. I met Ray Brown on that booking because he had booked the job for Milt Jackson. And that's when Ray Brown and my musical friendship started. He remembered me and called me 2 years later to join the LA 4 when Shelly Mann had left. And that's when I moved to LA in 78. So.
Yeah, I had not mentioned Ella Fitzgerald and the Count Basie Orchestra.
Right.
So
I was with Ella in 84, and she wasn't feeling well that year, and so we didn't work a whole lot, but it was fun to work with her what little bit we did. And we the biggest job that year, which I'll never forget, was at the Hollywood Bowl with a big band and Lalo Schifrin conducting, and it was just it was a great night.
But that was fun.
Yeah, it was a wonderful night.
It's obvious that your musicality certainly far transcends just picking up the drums and learning military rudiments. I mean, you've got a set of ears on you there
it wasn't always like that, though. I didn't make a band my first year at Indiana.
Really?
Yeah, I was machine gunning the windows out of the music school with my solos, and and I was playing like that behind the soloists as well. So when I didn't make a band, that was a rude awakening for me, and that's when I went to Mel Lewis. And started, studying Mel Lewis, later becoming friends with him. But I had to find out how big band drummers could play and not be in the way, because that's all I'd been doing. So thank you for the compliment, but it wasn't always that way.
Well, I think that's true of everybody, and I think a lot of it is youthful enthusiasm. I can remember being 18 and thinking I can play anything. And learning how to give up that and stay out of the way is part of growing up and being 21 or whatever,
right.
35. So a lot of that enthusiasm is nice to have, that feeling that you can do anything.
Well, I say this in drum clinics, too, when I'm talking to a lot of younger folks, is that we all get so caught up in how to play and what's the hippest thing to play right now. Who's the latest idol that people have promoted to be the next jazz god? And we have to follow in those footsteps, and we get so caught up in the seriousness of how to play that we forget the smile that came across our face the first time we sat down to an instrument and started to play it.
Right.
And we forget the joy of sitting down and playing the instrument.
Yeah.
So I try to keep that happening and at the front of my my playing all the time, because I am happy to be playing.
Yeah.
This isn't work, you know. Somebody laid the line on me not too long ago. Another musician said it was a particularly long flight, and it turned and they said, "Yeah, this is what I get paid for. I play music for nothing. This is the part I get paid for."
That is a terrific line. It really is. And looking for a parking place, as Bonnie Kessel used to say. That's the most important thing. We're going to listen to Day by Day. I love this track. I love the whole album. But I love this track because this really is in the pocket of what I was saying earlier, that it's sort of old. When I say old, I mean the late 50s, early 60s, those trio albums that came out, like the Andrew Previn albums and the Oscar Peterson albums, where it was just sort of... hit the wall swinging kind of stuff. And Day by Day, especially on this album, has that feel to it.
Great.
So we're listening to the Jeff Hamilton Trio. His new project is called It's Hamilton Time on Lake Street Records, and we're going to hear Day by Day. Jeff Hamilton. We're speaking to him from California. We just listened to Day by Day off his new album called It's Hamilton Time. Jeff, we were speaking before the last tune about young people, young musicians. You do clinics all over? Do you do...
Well, I would like to do more. I only do about a half dozen a year.
Mm-hmm.
The schedule doesn't allow me to really do a lot more, but I would like to get into that even more.
Mm-hmm. I think they're fun, too. I think in some ways I learn more at a clinic than the kids I'm trying to get the information to. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, I do.
Because you kind of have to go back and say, well, how did I do that? You know, now I got to figure out how to tell somebody how I did that.
Right.
And it's sort of like teaching the teacher. What do you listen to? You've said earlier that when you were that you have been influenced by Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich and Shelly Mann and Ed Thigpen and you mentioned your teachers. But when you're listening to records for fun, just as a consumer, who do you listen to?
Well, I think I have more Oscar Peterson. I'm looking at my record collection. I think I have more Oscar Peterson, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Thad Jones, Mel Lewis. I have more of Mel Lewis than I have of anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Shelly Mann is second, I think. Those are things that I enjoy listening to because it's really the root of the swing that attracted me. Plus, Duke Ellington was so innovative, and people have just the last 15, 20 years have just started to tip their hat to him in the proper manner, I think, that
mm-hmm.
he's this genius. And before that, he was just a big band leader with charisma, I think is what people looked at him.
Yeah, right.
But now, so many young musicians are going back and finding out what he was about. And harmonically, he was great. Adventurous. There was so much to learn just from any one of those CDs. And I buy about probably 25 to 30 CDs a month. And I try to listen to 5 to 7 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, really listen to them. I don't. They're not just on while I'm doing something else. I really try to sit down and especially when I'm traveling, I have more time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the young drummers that I love is Bill Stewart right now.
Mm-hmm.
He just knocks me out. Louis Nash is another guy.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm trying to find out what is being put on the market and trying to stay abreast of things while still keeping the roots of what I grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that has given me renewed hope, I guess, over the last years, because sometimes it's hard when you reach a certain age, and I've been doing this a real long time, and sometimes older musicians feel like, you know, well, it's just not like it used to be, and the quality of the music is different, and the way it's sold is different, and all that. And, of course, all of that is true nowadays, especially with the advent of technology. But one of the things that really gives me fresh hope all the time is the sheer numbers of these young musicians that are in love with jazz,
mm-hmm.
real jazz,
mm-hmm.
and are playing it well.
Well, if you look at our society, it's sort of been like this through the generations. I'm 41 years old. When I was coming up, you were supposed to be a fusion drummer.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't cool to play Oscar Peterson music.
Right.
It wasn't cool to dig Miles in the early 60s and the late 60s. And, you know, it had to be different. And now all of that's okay for these young guys to go check out. And I feel a little bit slighted because I was in the closet listening to all these things that they're listening to now and saying, this is the music I want to play, and I'm going to play it somehow. And now they're okay. They could, you know, they're talking, boy, did you hear that latest Lee Morgan thing? But, you know, and I wish I could have been that open to talk with my friends about that kind of thing. Because
really?
I really did feel like I was in the closet.
Yeah.
Listening to this, quote, old-time music, you know, because I wouldn't take the head off of the front of the bass drum. You know?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I'm older than you are, but I went through a period in the 70s. I look back on it now and I think I slept through the 70s musically because I felt like I had to include some kind of electronic music in my band.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of time not playing the music that I really am in love with.
Yeah.
And it was only after I got back to it that I felt like I really knew what I was doing. And you're right. In a way, you do feel a little cheated. You know, it's like, hey, you guys, I knew this all along. I knew this music was wonderful all along, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. I get a lot of that when I say, hey, have you heard such and such is 22 years old? Man, he's the best brush player I ever heard in my life. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, have you heard so and so? You're right. Yeah, I teach a class at Blair School, and a jazz improv class, and I had a young student last year that was, I guess he was about 18. He was a really good little piano player. And but he had an attitude on him, the kid did, and so he sort of came swaggering in and was like, you know, you can't teach me anything because I've played already in bands and I've done this and I've done that. And so I made him listen to Hank Jones and Thelonious Monk for the whole semester and made him learn some transcriptions. And he came in after reading through Ruby My Dear, he just came in white-faced. He was just, you don't really expect me to learn how to play this. This is so hard, you know. And I said, yeah, I do. But it's kind of fun, you know, to do that with them. But they have good ears, and then the kids that are coming up are just really wonderful musicians.
Well, I think it's great that, you know, that they're open enough to pass information on, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you're talking about things, they say, oh, yeah, what does he know? He doesn't know. He's not into what I'm into. And then it takes them 10 or 15 years to find out on their own.
Yeah,
It's always nice to find somebody that's ready to listen to you. Not that you're all knowing, but you have lived a little longer and you've been around some things. So
yeah, I have often said that the only cure for being 18 years old is to turn 35. But I guess the teacher's role in that is to try to circumvent that a little bit and make the journey not quite so hard
right.
as it was for us. Well, I'm just having entirely too much fun talking to you, and I'm doing most of the talking here in the last 5 minutes. We're going to go back to your trio album here and listen to Isn't It Romantic, which is a favorite of mine.
Oh.
So why don't you set this up for us?
All right. There's a little story about this. My wife came down the aisle when we were married to Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Strings.
And oh, my.
That nice. Is one of her favorite classical pieces, and Isn't It Romantic is also one of her favorite tunes, standard tunes from the movie. And I decided to put these together for her as a little surprise, and to top it all off, boy, is this disgusting or what?
Sounds great.
And it even gets sloppier. At the end of the tune, there's a little wedding ring on the bell of the cymbal to sort of finalize the whole thing.
That's
so
nice.
And we're going on 14 years. So
see.
As long as I keep arranging tunes for her, I'll be okay.
It sounds like the ticket to me.
Right.
It certainly does. Jeff Hamilton Trio, Isn't It Romantic?
Thank you.
Isn't It Romantic? Larry Fuller on the piano and Jesse Youssef Murphy on the bass and Jeff Hamilton drums. This is the Jeff Hamilton Trio on the Lake Street Records label. New project called It's Hamilton Time. We're speaking tonight with Jeff Hamilton. Jeff, tell us about the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra.
Well, it was a dream of bassist John Clayton and mine in Indiana. We were students at Indiana University. Ray Brown had sent him there to study classical bass, and I was there trying to learn how to play jazz, coming from a rudimental drumming background. And we both played in big bands there, but not in the same one. And we had played together on a couple of things away from school, and I was asking for advice on how to get better, and he was gladly giving me the advice. And eventually we said, we should put our own band together one of these days. Why don't we make this a goal of ours? So that happened back in 1972 or maybe 73. Mm-hmm. And we joined Monty Alexander later together, and still we're talking about the big band. And when a few years later we both ended up in Los Angeles, we decided to put the band together with Jeffrey Clayton, his brother, on the reeds. Mm-hmm. And we began to co-lead the band at that time. I think it was 84 maybe that we started the band.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 86, I'm not even sure. But we just played around Los Angeles for a long time, and then started doing some festivals and recorded and started to get a little more active. But this year we haven't been all that active because of my schedule with the Ray Brown Trio.
Mm-hmm.
But we recorded a CD, our third CD, that's coming out, has just come out actually, on Lake Street Records. And that's our third one, but our first one with Lake Street. So we're excited to see how that does.
Lake Street is out of San Francisco.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the album that we're listening to tonight is also on Lake Street.
That's the first release of Lake, right, first release of Lake Street.
The audience always likes to get that information because it really helps them. What else are you going to be doing? What would you like to do that you haven't done? Or what are some of the things that you're thinking about getting into?
Well, I have been at a crossroads until the CD project came together for the trio. Now I'm very clear on what I want to do. I'd like to work with the trio as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to work with the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra as much as I can, and still play with the Clayton Brothers Quartet if I can.
Mm-hmm.
All this presents a problem because I'm still playing with Oscar Peterson and I'm still playing with the Ray Brown Trio. And I would like to continue all of those projects. So it's just going to be a matter of juggling the scheduling together for next year to see if we can arrive at some dates that are good for everyone. But I've been with Ray since, at least in his trio, since 87.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good long stay, and I enjoy playing with Ray. We've been playing together since 78, and it's like it's pals on the band.
Oh, yeah.
And, we just did a recording session with Clark Terry in New York Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and we were kind of far away in the room, and somebody said, aren't you a little far away? And I said that we could play across the street from each other and would still lock in after this amount of time. So I would like to do that if I could with Ray and still do my own projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the goal is to get the trio really full steam ahead for next year.
Mm-hmm. That's a dilemma that a lot of people would like to have, having those choices. So that's really
I am very fortunate.
Yeah.
And fortunate too that the goals when John Clayton and I sat down, he said, "Who do you want to play with?" When I was 19 years old, I said, Joe Schmo down on the corner of he said, "No, I mean nationally, who do you want to play with?" I said, "Well, Oscar Peterson Trio or any portion of that, the Count Basie Band, and Woody Herman." And I was able to do all of those, so I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't have any goals for a while. I thought, well, gee, I did what I wanted. Now what am I going to do?
So yeah.
I guess it's time to do your own project.
Well, if this new project is any indication, all of the Jeff Hamilton Trio projects are going to be really spectacular. I recommend this to the audience very highly.
Yeah, thank you.
It's Hamilton Time project. It's full of wonderful, wonderful tunes, some standards, some originals. And just it has a spirit about it, as I said, that I haven't heard in a long time on a trio album. It's almost nostalgia, but it swings very, very hard.
You know, the best thing about this group, though, is I may have finally found a job that I can keep.
Your mother will be proud. You'll have a real paycheck. Tell us about the tune, Max. We're going to go out with that.
All right, Max was written for a very dear friend of mine who passed away a couple of years ago. He was like an uncle for me in Los Angeles, and we both were big sports fans. He had season tickets for the Rams, and never missed a job that I played in Los Angeles. And he loved this kind of beat and this kind of groove, so when he was in the hospital, I wrote this tune for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to hear it before he passed. And his name, a lot of people think it's written for Max Roach.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
Yeah, and it's actually written for my friend Max Ketterman.
Yeah. Well, we have been talking to Jeff Hamilton. He has a new project out on the Lake Street label called It's Hamilton Time. And you also have a new project coming out with the Clayton Hamilton Jazz Orchestra. We'll say goodnight and thank you so much for giving us your time. And the project is wonderful and your playing is wonderful. And we've really had a good time having you on the show.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it too.
All right. We're listening to Max, an original by Jeff Hamilton, to go out on. And I'll say goodnight to my audience. This is B.G. Adair with Improvised Thoughts.